Do you remember that I'm at capacity meme? It was really popular back in 2018 or 19. If you can't seem to recollect, no worries, let me jog your memory. A Twitter user named Melissa shared a thread about a friend reaching out to her and wanting to vent about some life stuff. And Melissa responded with this. I'm at capacity right now and this is a lot of emotional labor. So I don't think I have the bandwidth to hold space for you. So could we connect at a later time or date? I have no idea what Melissa sounds like, but in my head, this is it. The internet obviously went berserk with the memes because of how cold and robotic this message comes across as, especially when sending it to a friend. Oof. You would be tempted to write this off as people on Twitter thing. Twitter people talk like this, right? But trust me, I had a colleague, past tense, who'd use words like gaslighting, narcissistic, cognitive load, emotional labor, so much in regular everyday conversations. And I was just like... I always felt so inadequate to respond, constantly afraid of saying the wrong thing. This sort of language, which is called therapy speak, has become quite popular in the workplace because therapy has become quite popular in general.
Young Indians are actively taking care of their mental health. 44% increase in consultation is what Tracto is indicating.
The thing that I didn't know and I wish I had is that the sooner you learn how to respond to therapy speak, the easier it is to set the tone for all the conversations going forward. Especially when you're starting a new job, the first thing you probably notice is what your workplace sounds like. How your team communicates with each other, how they ask for and receive help, and most importantly, the language they use. Talking like them and sounding like them is probably really important to you. So let's get into why there is so much psychobabble in the world of work and how to deal with it in a less stressful, chill, relaxed way. Okay, that was a long intro. I'm at capacity right now, so I'll come back after the theme music. Welcome to the first 2 years. I'm Akshay Chandrasekharan, and this is the show where we ask and answer some of the toughest questions around work. Season 1, Episode 2. Before I figure out what's the best way to respond, I was curious about why this was happening in the first place. What changed? Well, more and more people don't want to live a dual life at work and outside. And more people wish to be treated like human beings in the workplace. If you need data to back it up, here it is. 65% of people acknowledge this need in a 2023 Gallup report, not so long ago. That's maybe why emotion-first language is becoming prominent in the workplace. Because you now bring your whole self to work with all your perfections and imperfections and all of the emotions. And this is a good thing, a reasonable expectation for an employee to have. Moreover, corporate speak too is very similar to therapy speak if you think about it. Kind of cold, robotic, deeply impersonal. Just go back and read all your emails to your colleagues. So if you had to draw a Venn diagram between corporate speak and therapy speak, that would be a big overlap. That's probably why so many of these mental health terms have entered the world of work. But that's just this one teeny tiny, actually very big problem.
Words have meaning.
Who would have thought?
But things like gaslighting, like it's not the same thing as lying. Like, yeah. Sometimes people are just liars and they lie about where they were or what they were doing. But that does not equate gaslighting. Gaslighting is a serious word that has serious implications, both about your relationship and about the person we are talking about. So,
Gargi is a counseling psychologist. So now you get the frustration in her voice. Many trained mental health professionals like Gargi worry about draining a word of its value. These terms losing its original importance and meaning, and the therapist community consider this as a huge downside to casual therapy speak at the workplace. 9 in 10 therapists I spoke to agreed with this.
We use trauma bonding as, oh, yesterday we were sitting and catching up and we didn't have so much in common, so we trauma bonded over our experience of XYZ.
Oh my God, yeah. And in the workplace, if you're former colleagues and you both went to the same workplace, and if you're like, hey, that workplace is so toxic, we trauma bonded. Yes. Like, we both experienced the same trauma, so we...
Like I said, right? Like, it means something so serious and not pleasant at all. Like, we use trauma bond as a, like to describe the bond that is a result of our shared trauma or our shared experience.
Yeah.
When the actual meaning has to do with my unique experience of my trauma and the person who caused me that trauma as well.
To me, it feels like an exaggerated way of describing your experience. It's like you know the words because either you're in therapy or you've seen it somewhere on social media. But you don't know it well enough to know how and when to use it. But hey, that's just my hunch. I'm no psychologist. So back to Gargi.
The way that the boundary setting related discourse happens on social media, it makes boundaries seem like this is something that I am, this is my demand. And if you don't meet this, then you are violating my boundary.
Yeah.
Or this is something that I need from you. And if you don't give it to me, then or this is something that I can't do for you. And if you ask me for it, then you are violating my boundary. And that makes boundaries seem like this person that drives a wedge in a relationship or between two people or two groups of people. Mm. When actually, boundaries are a great way to sustain a relationship.
Whether to leave it in or keep it.
Yeah, so did she say that it's a good thing to set boundaries or how to do it well or...
I'll give you an example, right? Setting a boundary is often like looked at as a way to shed your responsibility. Sometimes to just evade your responsibility, you're like, okay, I am setting a boundary. This means this is a non-negotiable. You can't talk to me about this and everything. But imagine a scenario where my manager believes in negative motivation, okay? And I am someone who's extremely self-critical. Right. And so I have to now communicate to him that when you use like a harsh language or a judgmental tone, it becomes very difficult for me to receive feedback because I already am very critical of my work. Right. So could you give me feedback in a way that I can be more receptive to it? That is an open conversation. Right. That is a conversation where he's understanding my working style and trying to adapt. So I've set a boundary, but this boundary will only bring us close, you know?
Got it. Oh, that's cool. So what you're saying is that, like, usually if I think of it, it's like setting a boundary is like limiting, like the word itself is limiting, right? Like you set a boundary, set a border, put up a wall or something like that.
Yeah.
But what Gargi is saying is that it's the opposite. Like you're trying to break down that wall and get closer, like.
Yeah, it's not about building a wall, it's about taking it down. Yeah. A boundary is supposed to bring you closer and not, you know, not keep you apart in a way. Yeah.
Actually, that's interesting because, like, the moment anyone says to me that you need to set a boundary, I feel that's so difficult to do because I'm like, what will the other person think? I'm essentially implying that I want to limit my relationship in some way with that person.
Correct.
But if you think of it in this way and you also communicate that, then it's like easier. Like I'm like, okay, then this is possible. I do this. This sounds good for me.
Exactly. When the end goal is that it's going to bring you guys closer and you're going to work better, it might be a big incentive to just set a boundary. So you think I should leave this in? Is this interesting?
Yeah, leave this in. This is great. This is very nice.
Okay. I'm recording this call, by the way.
Okay, then. Cool. My cameo.
Yes. Thanks, Anushka.
Okay, cool.
The voice you just heard is of Anushka's, the producer of this show. And coming up next is how you can respond to someone throwing therapy jargons at you.
So what I found in my research is, and I do a lot of research on retention, but people who survive the first 60 days, which is the first 2 months, and then 90 days, which is 3 months, have a higher chance of saying 6 months. If they spend 180 days, they are able to make a lot of social adjustments.
Radhika Bhalla is an organizational psychologist, and this is right up her alley. She believes that the onus is not just on the individual who's responding, but the companies have a role to play too.
I spoke to a series of Gen Zs as a part of my research, and this also explains why they resort to therapy speak, is when they walk in, they get absolutely, in a lot of organizations, absolutely no love, which means you walk in, there is just a set of rules that are put on you suddenly you're expected to perform, fit in. There is no space to feel misadjusted, to feel lost, for somebody to help you through your first
running.
Yeah, you're hitting the ground running, you're left on your own, trying to figure out the ropes, and then you do not know how you're feeling, and you will resort to labels. Because who is this one person who is helping you transition? Everybody comes and goes. The trainer comes and goes, induction comes and goes, HR comes and goes. Your manager has no time because the manager is anyway reeling under a lot of goals and targets. So what does this young person do in the first 3 months? The person is completely lost. So now doesn't know what to do, will start labeling because they do need a vocabulary to express themselves.
Yeah.
And you aren't giving them one.
Well, Radhika does have a point and she strongly believes in it. But I still did not want to give up on my quest to find ways to respond to this on an individual level. So I insisted and persisted and she finally relented. Here's what I found out. Radhika and I talked about reframing it in your head. If someone comes to you and says, "You are making me anxious," what they're really saying is, "I feel anxious in your presence." It may be useful to reframe it in your head as a subjective experience of your colleague and not an objective assessment of who you are as a person, even when they're not describing it like that. This reframing may reduce the feelings of guilt and defensiveness. So instinct to respond with, "No way I'm making you feel anxious, I've been so nice to you," can be completely avoided. My producer Anushka and I also resonated with this idea.
So a good way is to get into some form of appreciative inquiry to say, "Okay, tell me 5 moments when you felt that this was toxic." So take them back, and these are very simple, open-ended questions to ask. It doesn't even need you to be a therapy to say, "Okay, you're feeling toxic. You feel this is a heartless place. Tell me about 5 things that have happened or 3 things that have happened that left you with this feeling." And you'll be surprised at people's ability. So initially they may not have the words for it, but they will come back to you and say, "Okay, let me try and tell you what happened." So the idea is to bring them back into some form of a reflection mode.
Asking questions. Such a simple concept, but so powerful in the moment. And finally, if you're still overwhelmed in the moment like Akshay from a year ago, it's okay. Let yourself make some mistakes. You're only human. You live and learn, I guess. Thank you so much for listening. You can write to me with feedback at akshaya@the-ken.com. The first 2 years is produced from the newsroom of The Ken, India's first subscriber-only business news platform. The episode was written and hosted by me, Akshay Chandrasekharan, produced by Anushka Mukherjee, and audio engineering by Rajiv CN. See you next week.